Hello again, everybody, and welcome again to Focus Fire Podcast. This is episode number 17. I'm Alan, and always I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dirty Pool.
What's up, guys?
Focus Fire is once again a semi-regular competitive 40K podcast aimed at providing you focused and practical advice that you can actually use to improve your game.
Say that, you can say that a little faster.
Said it so many times, I guess people are sick of it. This podcast is brought to you once again through the TFG Radio Network. Part of the fine family of TFG podcasts. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at focusfirepodcast@gmail.com. Tonight, we're going to bring you our final installment in our LVO prep series for obvious reasons because, you know, next week it's the LVO. And we're going to covering three topics, physical prep and the LVO layout, or final lists and meta-analysis and predictions.
Oh, saucy stuff, Alan. It's going to be an exciting episode.
So we've been off the air for a little while. We kind of took a little hiatus a couple weeks ago for the holidays. How was your holidays? How are you doing?
Well, you know, Alan, it was great. I saw a lot of family, got everyone sick, and I am now recovered and back in the game.
Physically sick, not sick of you.
Maybe both.
you've been playing a lot of games, and you, of course, won or in-house league. How many players played in the
league? We had 34 players in our local league.
And you were number one. Climbed to the very top.
Climbed to the top.
Actually, you tied, but you won by bonus points.
Yeah, battle points it was.
So you won the tiebreaker. Doesn't matter by how much.
A win is a win.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been kind of busy. I have finally unlocked my big quest today. I'm planning this summer to hike the PCT.
Pacific Crest Trail, for those of those who don't know.
It's basically a trail from Mexico to Canada. And today was the day. They only allow 50 hikers to hike during the day, and it's huge demand. And they gave out the first 35 slots in October, and then they released the final 15 slots today. So I was able to get April 22nd is my starting date.
Awesome,
so,
dude. That's great.
I know. So I've unlocked my big quest, and I've been doing a lot of side quests to get ready for it. I've been doing I've been grinding for gold the month of December, trying to earn a lot of money because it takes a lot of money to be a homeless hobo. It takes like $2,000 just in equipment. So I got all my equipment, which is good. And then I lost 20 pounds for December. I got to lose 60 more pounds, and I got to do a bunch of other things. So I still got a lot of side quests I got to do.
And you got to get ready for the LVO.
I got to get ready for the LVO, too.
Let's not forget the most important of things.
I know. We can't. So we're going to talk about physical prep and the LVO layout.
All right. So before I wanted to kind of preface this discussion with, we have in the past done an episode on GT prep. So we might cover some of the same things in this episode that we covered in the last episode. But let's be honest, no one goes back and listens to the old episodes. And because there is over 1,000 people registered for the 40K finals at LVO or the champs. So it's quite likely that a lot of people are going to be going to the LVO for the first time. So it's important to kind of prepare for the LVO. If you've never been to the LVO before, it's unlike any other event you've ever been to. I mean, even for Al and I, who are veterans, multiple year veterans of the LVO, this year is going to be double the size of last year for the champs. So it's going to be very, very large. So in order to get ready for such a large event, there's a couple of things that you want to do. And the first thing is pretty obvious, but you need to pack all your shit. And what I would do is I would make a checklist. Like, I'm going to make a checklist. I need to bring all my models. I have them all laid out somewhere, and I got to I'm going to print out my army list, and I'm going to make sure I have all my models packed up before I leave, because you don't want to get to the LVO and find out that you don't have a solitaire. I think that's something that you did last year, right?
No, that was a Nova 2 years ago. I had to run downstairs in their swap shop or whatever and buy a used solitaire on the fly.
Luckily, they had one that was painted, right?
Yep.
That's a couple of things that I kind of would do. You want to make sure that you have on there your dice, any game aids, and anything else you need to actually play the game. You get your codexes together, print out your army list, because you actually do have to have a printed copy of your army list to hand to your opponents by pursuant to the code of conduct. So kind of avoid any issues by getting that all done ahead of time. Don't stress about it on the day before you leave.
Yeah, and I'd recommend also packing a few days ahead of time, because I'm always wait till the last minute sometimes to reassemble broken models and to get everything, you know, where it has to be. And that's sometimes where I forget models, is where I leave them on my painting table because I'm gluing them together at the last minute. And then I grab my bag and go, and I leave something behind. So you kind of want to get everything up and ready and situated.
Yeah, and I would bring extra super glue. Bring unopened super glue, because Vegas is actually in the high desert. It's a couple thousand feet above sea level, if I recall. And I went one time with an open super glue in my case, and it exploded from the pressure because we drove from L.A., and I got super glue all over my Kodak. I couldn't go for it. Super glued my Kodak together, which was kind of a drag. But so you want to just make sure you're obviously covering the basics. You want to bring all your stuff that you're going to need to play your games. One thing that's really important is the LVO is in a large cavernous room for the champs. And in that is going to be really long rows of tables. And there'll be about four tables in a row. And then there'll be a kind of a main thoroughfare walkway, and then four more tables that continue down the row, and then again and again. So there's like a long line of tables, and you're gonna have to move your army from table one to table two, and you need to have an army tray. You absolutely must have something to bring your army. You cannot have your army packed up in a box or in foam and you're packing it away in between games. You're gonna lose too much time, and it's going to be a pain in the ass logistically for you getting from game day. So get an army tray. You don't even have to get a nice one. You can go to McDonald's and get a tray from, you know, the cafeteria.
Swipe something from the tray.
Yeah, there's a million ways to do it. And a McDonald's tray is big enough for a Space Marine army. So for half of you who are going, it could work out.
Yeah, those are, you need some sort of just handheld tray to move your army from table to table. And also just put it down somewhere, you know, just convenient. It's good just to travel around. You can use a tableware case, actually, just to travel around from table to table. But I put but tableware has these inserts that that are just basically metal that you magnetize your models and stick them to. And I put them in the bottom of my tray, and they're pretty nice, easy to lift out units.
Yeah. And, you know, you want to do any, like, I'm playing about 200 orcs, and I have like little boxes I'm putting each of my units in, so that when I'm ready to deploy them, I can just pick the box up and kind of dump it out, and then, you know, move the models around, save myself some time with deploying.
And you also bought a cart.
I did, yeah. So this is, I kind of went above and beyond, and it's not something for everyone, but I found it to be phenomenal because essentially it's a food cart that I ordered on Amazon for like $80. So it's not cheap. But it rolls, and it's about table height. So when I get to the table, I don't have to, like, put my army tray on a chair next to the table. I can just roll up. I have my army there, and I place my models directly from the tray or the cart onto the table, and then vice versa when they're removed from the table. And it just it helps a lot. And it has three levels. So you have another level for, like, my backpack with my water, and another level for dice and codexes and anything else that I may need to put on there during the tournament. So,
yeah, it's collapsible too. So mm-hmm. You transporting it to and from the event is pretty good. Now, if you're in like a giant GT, I really recommend having those carts. You see more and more people starting to have them and carry their armies around. Though if smaller GTs, when space is at a premium, when there's a lot of moon landings and you're butt to butt, those carts are kind of a pain, and they're kind of in the way a lot. But if you're at the ones with the wide alleys and wide aisles, those are really a time saver and a lifesaver.
Yeah, I mean, even we went to the Dice Hammer GT last month, and that didn't have the biggest space between the tables, but I was still able to move my cart around there. And I had it at Slaughterfest earlier this year, which had an enormous amount of space. Didn't even need it at Slaughterfest.
Yeah, like, but SoCal Open, there's a huge amount of room. So
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you can get one. I recommend them. They're not cheap. So, you know, if it's something that's in your budget, it's not necessary.
Especially at the LVO, when the distances are so great, too. Because normally you're parking outside a venue, you can walk in, it's not too bad. LVO, you know, just going from, like, you're parking way over, well, the parking situation is you're parking miles away, And then also you're usually way up these floors, and sometimes they have two towers in the at the Bally's Hotel. And if you're in the far tower, it's a long way to get to the where the convention is, where the games are being played.
Yeah, and so having the cart, it kind of bumps and all your models bump around, and you don't want to lose one off the side kind of thing. So it's not the best when you're walking a long distance, but like when you're actually at the table, it's very nice. So then, you know, you guys want to... I would pack food and snacks to bring with you into the convention hall. You're not allowed to bring food, and you're not allowed to bring water, but...
Are you allowed to bring water?
Yeah, I think you can bring an empty water bottle in or whatever.
Right. What most people do is bring an empty water bottle, and then you can bring an empty water bottle in, because they have the big jugs of water there that you can fill up. And that way, the distances are pretty big in that hall for LVO, so you don't want to walk across the hall, you know, if you get thirsty or in between games. You want to stay hydrated, so you want to fill up a water bottle and drink plenty.
Yeah, and you want to bring a big water bottle. Don't bring, like, a small one that you'll fill it up and you'll have two drinks of it and it'll be gone. Bring like, a 45 or 30-ounce water bottle, one that you can fill up and then drink for the entire game for, like, 2 hours before you run out. You can figure out if you can bring in your own snacks. I mean, I'm sure that you guys will be resourceful to figure that out. But having some sort of snack, usually like a nutty bar or something like that, to just kind of give you a little bit of energy and sugar throughout the day. Because 40K is a mentally draining game, especially in a competitive environment like the LVO. So you need, I'd recommend eating one at like right before every game to just boost your blood sugar and keep your body and your mind up to tip-top shape.
And the pro tip is they stop all food and drinks coming in, but it's all, you should say, visible food and drinks. So if you have things stashed in your bag and you eat it discreetly, that's you're probably going to be, I'm not going to say you should do it, but I'm saying you'd be okay doing it.
Yeah, the guy at the front is just a security mook. He's not doing anything too. He's not patting anyone down.
It's not like the London GT two years ago where they went through all your bags and went through everything. Yeah. This is America here where we have some privacy rights. But yeah, you can stash them. Because especially in the morning, sometimes you're not you don't have time for breakfast, or you don't have anything, maybe just down a bar or two. And then also, you know, sometimes lunch goes, you know, if you just about basically time out and you go to the distance, you know, you might not have all the time in the world to go get lunch too, and especially if you don't want to spend $15 for one of those hamburgers and cold fries. And also, or wait in the huge line downstairs at one of the food venues, or in between, like round two and three, you need a little, you know, a little snack, a little pick-me-up or something like that. So you might want to think about just bringing something.
Yeah. So be prepared for food. And a little later in this episode, we'll go over kind of like some of the food options that are in the area. But you want to bring your own food so you don't have to rely on those in between games. And one thing that is super critical is like pain reliever. I mean, you might have a headache from the night before for some reason, possibly having to do with alcohol. It is Vegas. So bring some Advil, bring some Tylenol, whatever you Excedrin, whatever you use, prefer for your pain relief. Because you might have a headache, you're going to be standing up a lot.
Yeah, you're going to be thinking a lot. You're going to be mentally exhausted, and sometimes that gives you a headache. And also, you get a little dehydrated. Sometimes that brings on headaches and the altitude and the air and everything. So
yeah, and just make sure you sit down during your games. That'll really help with pain. If it's not your turn, try and sit down. I mean, you know, I know everyone wants to be involved and watch their opponent move their models around, roll their dice, but if you can, remember to sit down. Your knees will thank you at the end of the day.
Conserve your energy.
Yeah. So a couple of things. Like, we want to talk about the layout of the LVO. It's in, if you don't know, it's in Bally's Casino. If you didn't know and you're going, it's kind of, if you didn't know that, you're fucked. But so you got to figure out how you're going to get there. If you're staying in the hotel, it's pretty self-explanatory. You just walk down from your hotel room into the main hotel and then head away from the strip, and you just keep going through the casino, and there's two towers. One tower is like right next to the entrance, and one tower is on the other side of the entrance right next to the strip. So if you're on the far tower next to the strip, you got to kind of walk across the entire gaming hall. to get to the actual convention area. If you're not staying at Bally's, if you're staying at a different hotel, I would highly recommend that on Thursday you go over to Bally's and kind of walk around and get a sense of where everything is. You can go into the for pre-registration. I would highly recommend everyone pre-register on Thursday night. The lines aren't as long. A lot of people will be there for, I think GW does some reveal or something like that. But figure out the logistics. Where are you going to park? You know, how long it's going to take for you to get from your car to the actual convention hall. And just spend Thursday night walking around. You're going to want to walk around and see where the food options are that we're going to go over, because knowing ahead of time will just eliminate the stress of having to try and find it on the day of the tournament. So,
yeah, because parking actually there is behind the Paris Hotel. There's no parking actually in Bally's. And so you have to walk through the Paris parking lot, take an elevator down, and walk all the way through Paris and the Bally's and all the way in the back of Bally's. So it's you need to figure out how much time it's going to take you, because don't arrive like a few minutes before thinking you're going to make it in time.
Yeah, unless it's round one on day one, because every year BCP fucking crashes at round one. And I cannot imagine that it doesn't crash again this year. If it goes out without a fluke, without a hitch, that's great. I will be super excited. But I expect round one to start 30 minutes late.
And they're always late registering people. People wait till the last minute, so they got a long line. They got to register. And the other thing is that they have, you know, people who just walk in, you know, waiting for to see if they have empty spots to take their spots. So
yeah, so. There's a couple of food options. Obviously, in the convention hall, there's a few bars, and there is a food option in the main kind of hallway in between the two halls. And they do serve like lunch and stuff like that. And it's relatively cheap for Vegas. The food quality is shit. Honestly, it's just, you know, kind of like catered food.
I thought it was pretty pricey, like $15 for like a burger and fries and things.
Yeah, but that's Vegas price. Yeah, you're gonna pay that anywhere. But it's not good. And there is a lot of places where you can go instead. So as you go into the convention hall, there's a Buca di Beppo there. They have a good brunch, like breakfast special buffet. There is a burger place right there. And then if right next to Buca di Beppo's is a Mexican food place. And then there are some escalators that you can go down. And they go into this hallway that has some shops in it. It's like a little kind of mini mall. And then you walk through there, and there's a big food court. And it has a burger place, I think it's
Johnny Rollins, Rockets.
Johnny
maybe?
Rockets, yeah. And then it's they have a Subway, Asian bowl place, a Subway.
Sbarro's.
Yeah, and then they have a bunch of food options down there. And then also near the check-in area for the hotel, if you kind of walk toward the strip, you'll go kind of outside and up and over a long kind of bridge. And you'll be like right on the strip, and there's a ton of stuff there. There's a pizza place, there's a burger place, there's all kinds of quick food places you can eat. There's a taco place, so there's a ton of food options available in the immediate area. And you just, I would familiarize with yourself with those on Thursday night before the game. So if you do finish your lunch early, or finish your first game early on either day for lunch, don't eat at the don't eat in the convention hall. It's not that good, and you can easily go. You have enough time to go somewhere else. And
yeah, generally the places out front are like sit down places. It'll take you a little while to get your burger and stuff like that. Especially if it's the rush of all the convention here, you probably want to go downstairs if you can, if you have time. I clipped some coupons in the mail for Subway, so I'm planning on eating some Subway at a discount. So you plan ahead, and that's. Subway is probably one of the cheapest options, and you know, if you bring a bag of chips at home, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty economical.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways you can do it on the cheap. You know, Vegas is expensive, so you can always bring food with you from wherever you're coming from to, as well, and keep that in your room. Most of the rooms have a mini fridge and a microwave, so just keep that in mind that you can probably heat up food at your room in your room if you needed to. So that's kind of all I wanted to talk about for the layout, Alan. Anything else that comes to mind for you?
Not for the layout, but yeah, just get yourself the lay of the land. You kind of generally want to stay in the hotel if at all possible, because the distances are just so great in Vegas. Because even if you just look at a map, you're like, oh, Flamingo is across the street. You, that is an ordeal to get back and forth between the Bally's and the Flamingo. It's probably about 30 minutes or so to cross there. So get yourself familiar with the distances and the time required to travel around.
Yeah. So the next topic, what you've all been waiting for, what we finally decided to bring in our list. So this should be pretty short, hopefully, and then we'll get on to the meat of the meta-analysis and predictions for the top eight. But I am bringing my orcs, the same list I ran at Dice Hammer. It is 90 Evil Sun Boys, a war boss on a war bike who is still legal, according to the LVO judges. He's a
How much did that cost you?
Made it through. I won't mention it. I'm also bringing a big mech, but I've decided to keep him in, put him in mega armor to give him a 2-up armor save to hopefully let him survive through a round of eliminator shooting. And I'll kind of go into that a little later. And then I have another battalion with 2 weird boys. It's Bad Moons. And it has 30 shooter boys and 2 units of Gretchen, and then 15 tank busta boys with 6 bomb squigs. And then finally, a Death Skulls battalion with 3 shock attack guns, 30 Gretchen, and the Mad Doctor himself, Gratznik. So it is a list that is almost similar, pretty much the same as I was ran at Dice Hammer, with a minor modification of changing the Big Mech to keep him in Meg armor. I lose 5 boys, so it's in the Evil Sun, there's a unit of 25 instead of 30 to keep him in Meg armor. But my fear is, in the Raven Guard matchup, the Eliminators will, typically what I've found is when he was on foot and was just wearing a t-shirt, he would get shot to death by the Eliminators in the first turn. It would take all 9 of them to down him because of his 5-up invulnerable save and his 6-up feel no pain, but they would do it by like a wound or two. So by giving him a 2-up armor save, he gets a little more durable. I even think he gets an extra wound. I'd have to check his data slate, but I think he might get an extra wound, and he gets a 2-up armor save. So if he's sitting on a piece of terrain, he's got a 1-up armor save. Even if he's out in the open, he's probably going to live through that first round of fire. And then the big reason for that is because what happens is they'll kill him, and then my force field goes away. And then all my boys just die because they have 6-up armor and no invulnerable save anymore. So they all just kind of melt away to marine shooting. So that invulnerable save is really important to kind of keep my durability if I go second.
It's interesting how much eliminators impact the meta and games and your thinking of building lists.
Yeah, I mean, for 72 points, it's a phenomenal unit. It's really fucking busted. But, you know, because it's like a Vindicare Assassin is already really scary. But then now you have these eliminators that can shoot out of line of sight, so you can't even play around it.
Yeah, yeah, they never miss, 36-inch range, and no line of sight necessary.
Yeah, so that's my list. My goal is to go 4-2. I would be happy if I went 5-1, obviously.
You went through your list?
What was that?
You went through your list?
Yeah. Oh. It's 120 Orc Boys, some characters, 3 shock attack guns.
I heard you're a big armor guy, and that was it.
It's good to know you listen.
How many Ludas?
No Ludas.
15. How many Gretchen?
50 Gretchen.
50 Gretchen? Yeah. For what?
Just for battalion attacks. They just usually sit around and die, and I try and hide them, but it is what it is. So that's my list. It does decent against Marines. And one thing I've been noticing, cruising BCP the last week or two, is that a lot of the kind of meta Marine builds are kind of foregoing the inclusion of Eliminators, which is great for me, because that's really the problem with, for me, I've found with Marines is Eliminator. So I'm hoping that if I do run into Marines, it'll be Eliminator lists or one unit of Eliminator or something like that. I've seen a few lists with 1 unit for some reason, but I can definitely deal with that. It's the 9 Eliminators that really, shits in my coffee. And of course, Thunderfire cannons aren't really fun, but I'm not going to dodge Thunderfire cannons, that's for sure. So that's a list. If I can go 4-2 with it, I'll be more than happy. That's my goal, my expectations. But I'd love to go 5-1 if I can pull it off.
My list is, I took a Fate Skimmer. I have no idea why this thing is 30 points more expensive, but instead of going down points, but
The face camera is the Herald on the Chariot?
Herald on the Chariot, yeah. So I was like, I don't know why I should be paying 20 points less, and instead they charge me 30 points more. So, all right, whatever. So I need a Herald. I need to give all my demons plus one strength. So I was like, fine, whatever. It's not like everybody, not like they were ruining the meta. I guess in England, maybe, they were... They're out of control with their Zeench Heralds, and they had to stop them. But they're dominating the meta, because I've seen so many Zeench Heralds and horror pink horrors around. So anyways, I took the change in because I have so many horrors, and a lot of my Thousand Sons actually get the Feel No Pain. So I need to take the changeling. I took a 25 squad of pink horrors. That's basically going to be... plopped in my deployment zone, protecting my characters from being shot. I have a 20-man pink horror squad for deep striking, and then like a combo pink horror brimstone unit to try to keep alive, just for battalion attacks. And then my Thousand Sons, I took a Supreme Command detachment. I took Ahriman. I took a Demon Prince, no wings, because wings on a Thousand Sons Prince is 40 points. I probably should have left the Demon Prince at home. If I needed a Demon Prince, I could have just summoned one. But that's a story for another day. But I did take the Demon Prince. I guess I can give him the Dark Matter Crystal, and I can check him across the board now if I have to. Even though he doesn't have wings, he's still somewhat mobile and can get where he needs to be. I took 3 Terminator Sorcerers.
Ooh, with familiars?
With familiars, 120 points each. So I'm gonna just try to wreck things with my mind bullets. just go ham with psychic powers.
What about the biggest mind bullet of all?
Yeah, and then the last the piece of resistance is Magnus.
The big dog.
I kind of wanted to leave Magnus at home, because if you notice, my army is just basically pink horrors and characters. So it's kind of like a kill denial list, the way it's formatted. I have over 200 summoning points, too, to keep the pinks alive and to summon some crap if I need it later on. But I wanted to leave Magnus at home, but Magnus, I can't quit you. I just can't play without him. He's just so big, and he just does, first of all, I need a good counter-assault element. He's a really good counter-assault element. And sometimes he just needs to cross the board in a hurry and wreck stuff. And he can do that. And he just has his psychic powers are so dominating. And there's we're going to probably see a bunch of Death Stars. Meta analysis. I guess we can go flip into that now. Meta-analysis and predictions. So one of the meta-analysis I was thinking about, was like the Seer Council. Now, Seer Council, you can just shut off their invulnerable save and just go ham on them.
And yeah, the Eldar Seer Council got a significant point drop in Chapter Approved, and it was already seeing play. I mean, at BAO this last year, there was a Seer Council list in the top 8. And, you know, it's a solid list. It was solid before Chapter Approved, and for some reason, all those guys went down in points.
Yeah, so I kind of wish I took a Scorpius, because there are eliminators I like to counter and things hidden in nooks and crannies that you kind of want to take down. But unfortunately, that's 200 points, and I don't know. I figured I'll just do without it. I have one at home, but I'm not gonna use it. And so we're going to see... I don't know. Somebody should have gone through all the lists or all the factions and figured out how many Space Marines there are and how many Eldar there are and how many. But
yeah, I don't think it's yet. You know, list submission at the time of recording was last night, so it's less than 24 hours. We don't have access to the list, and I don't think everyone has a declared faction on their thing. So I don't think that analysis will come out until
the lists are locked and everybody submitted.
Yeah, probably another week or so.
Yeah, because I kind of, at the last minute, I kind of wanted the Lord of Change with the, and so I downgraded the Fate Skimmer to a change cast flux, whatever the Walking Herald is, and drop a Terminator Sorcerer and bring in the Lord of Chains, but all the lists are locked now, so I can't change if I wanted to. I thought I was going to eat a yellow card. I was like, let me change it, but nope. I'm on the outside looking in.
So what do you think we're going to see? I mean, obviously, it's Marines. Not really a prediction to say that there will be Marines. But, you know, what do you think is going to be out there besides Marines?
Like a spoiler?
No, just in general, what do you think is going to have a lot of presence at the top, you know, 250 tables or, you know, 250 spots?
Chaos.
What kind of chaos are you thinking?
What are those monstrosities?
Lord of Skulls?
Yes.
Oh, the Lord of Skulls, the Super Knight.
Yeah, it's like 20, I was looking at them, it's like, I thought they shot bad. I thought they like hit on Ballista Skill 4, but no, they have Ballista Skill 3. It's like, yeah, that sucks. Yeah. And they basically have this Gatling Canyon, does all kinds of wounds, and good strength, 48-inch range, and the price apparently, so it's like a knight, and the price dropped on them.
If you haven't looked at Lord of Skulls, it is essentially a Chaos Knight that is probably is a little cheaper than a Chaos Knight for effectively the same shooting, better close combat, and it can be buffed is the important part. It is not a Chaos Knight faction key or whatever that is. It's Heretic Astartes, and it can be warp-timed. It can be prescience. Your Master of Possession can give it +1 to its invulnerable save. So if you have three of them and a Master of Possession hiding behind them, they're suddenly all rocking 4+ invulnerable saves without having to rotate. I mean, it can get a Demon Forge strat to reroll hits and reroll all wounds. The big one I already mentioned is Warp Time, obviously. But I would expect to see a few triple Lord of Skull lists rocking around. I don't think they'll be that common because I don't think people have three Lord of Skulls, to be frank, and getting them and painting them and putting them together prior to LVO when they went down in points less than 30 days ago, I don't think that's going to be a reality. And you, because of the LVO's new painting requirements, you can't just have three different, you can't borrow hammer your three Lord of Skulls, so there will probably be a few of them.
Not that anybody owns the Lord of Skulls.
Exactly, that's a big problem too, the hard time finding them even if you wanted to borrow them. I think there might be a few of those lists. I don't think they're going to be dominating because, in reality, they're just knights. They can be healed up a little quicker than regular knights, so they're a little more durable, and they get legion buffs and stuff like that. So there is some there. They definitely are more. There's more play to them, but they essentially function like knights. And if an army can kill knights, then it shouldn't have a problem killing Lord of Skulls. So I mean, that's kind of my prediction on those units. I think the big boogeyman for Chaos is going to be Possessed Stars. And these are going to be Alpha Legion, and there's a stratagem that they can use where you can't target them unless they're the closest unit. And so these things can advance and charge in a myriad of ways, and they can warp time, so they have like a 30 to 40-inch effective threat range. And there's a million buffs you can put on these things, and they can run in and just wreck everything. My big critique of the Possessed Bomb is that the character support you need to make it tick all is like, you need to be within 6 inches. You need to be within 6 inches of the Possessed. And if they have a 30-inch threat range, your characters aren't moving 30 inches. So you're either stringing way back to get the buffs, or your characters are somehow deep striking or having jump packs and stuff like that in order to facilitate buffing them close to the enemy. And they are relatively durable. You know, they are 2 wounds each. And, you know, if they wrap things in combat, they're not the worst things for surviving, but you know, they're not gonna stick around the whole game necessarily.
Yeah, we see a lot of the meta through the prism of our own armies because I think I can handle a Possessed Bomb pretty easily. I'm gonna have trouble with the Lord of Skulls,
so. Right? Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, for you, killing a knight is probably a lot more difficult than, but I mean, if you get a Death Axe off Magnus and go in and whack two of those things, yeah, or at least whack one, you can't fight twice, right?
No. Yeah. But he can go up and he can harm one, and I can drop a bunch of sorcerers down, and they can do harm with their mind bullets.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I actually think that we're gonna see a lot of Eldar flyer lists in the top 100, and I'll tell you why. So LVO decided to put out a standardized terrain setup for the top 100 tables. I think this is a stupid idea, personally. I hate it because I'm a competitive player. And like, I get some competitive players really like it, but I hate it because it's like now I know, and now everyone knows what the table is going to look like, what terrain is going to be on the tables, and they can plan for it, they can game it. It just, when it was, you get a random table, and the top 100 tables have all kinds of random tables on there, and you could have magic boxes on some. It means you had to have a more versatile army. Now, knowing that there's only going to be essentially two L's that aren't even like Nova L's or like just regular ruins, two L-shaped ruins, and like essentially two L-shaped ruins and some forests and a bunch of like
And that's hills. Only in some tables. Some other tables will just have like little ruins to hide behind and kind of close to the deployment zone.
Yeah, and so each layout, each deployment map has a different layout how you're supposed to arrange the terrain. So you roll for your deployment, and then you set up the terrain. So, and this is only for the top 100 tables, and they will be seeding everyone based on their record. So if you're sucking, you're not going to have to worry about it. But to me, it's I don't like it fundamentally because I do like varied terrain. I like having like, you know, FLG makes some really cool terrain kits. Like they have that big Gothic ruin one where the knight can walk through the building and has some like more enclosed boxes, you know. I like that.
They have a big hangar.
Oh, the hangar. That's my favorite. Oh, my God. TFG Radio exclusive. But anyways, I'm thinking because of the layout, it's essentially two L-shaped ruins and a bunch of stuff that you can't hide in. So there's actually like zero places to hide. There's a few walls that you can put in between yourself and the opponent to block line of sight. But Eldar flyers don't give a fuck about that because they fly. So they move 100 inches or whatever it is, and they can just go, okay.
Spin on a dive.
Yeah, and so they're going to – I think Eldar Flyer is going to have a really strong showing because of the terrain of the top 100. So if they can win their first game and start getting onto those top 100 tables, they're gonna be essentially – there's no magic boxes to contend with, so Eldar don't need to worry about magic boxes. They're going to say, I have 9 flyers. I don't give a shit. I can just fly around, kill everything, and table you in one turn. I know for – instance, Ray Ahumada at the Dice Hammer GT was in round 4, lost to the guy who ended up winning the tournament. And the only reason this guy won because there was two giant magic boxes in the middle of the board with no windows, and he just literally hid in the boxes the entire game and scored Coldmore the bonus, I think, like for a few turns. So Ray's planes flew around the table, killed some things for a first turn or two, and then essentially had nothing else to do for the rest of the game, and that will never happen to him in LVO if he's at these top tables where there's standardized terrain.
So. Yeah, that's the big problem with the standardized terrain and not having any magic boxes because, you know, that list is dominating under the right circumstances, and that's one thing. It's not well-rounded. Is those, like, magic boxes in the particular armies because otherwise it's extremely hard to shoot those stupid things out of the sky. And they have a tremendous amount of firepower, very good range, and can basically screen some. I think the Elder Flyer lists are going to do really well at LVO.
My prediction is that we're going to see at least two Eldar Flyer spams in the top 8. I think that they will do really well because of this terrain in the top 100 tables. There's the fact that there's not 4 ruins on the board. If there was 4 ruins and like one of them was like a U-shaped ruin, it wasn't the magic box, but you could hide like a Thunderfire cannon in there or a couple of infantry squads or Gretchen, that kind of thing there. You could at least like, you know, so the plane had to fly it to a specific place to see into it. That might be something that would be like, okay, at least there's that, but there's nothing. There's like 2 ruins in the center and then a bunch of there's nothing to hide in from the whole table.
Right, because the magic L's are good, and, well, there's limitations to the magic L's, the Nova L's, as everybody calls them.
But they're not even Nova L's, because they're not enclosed all the way up.
Because there's a lot of problems, because also, you're back in your deployment zone, you actually start off of the L's, and if you have playing against an opponent that has a faster, more maneuverable army, you can kind of maneuver to where you can almost see everything anyway, so It's kind of the Nova L's have kind of I don't know, their time has kind of passed in a way.
Yeah, well, so I mean that's kind of one thing that I think is going to affect the meta. Obviously, you know, I think A few Tau players will do well. Brian Pullen and Richard Siegler are obviously phenomenal Tau players, and I think they'll continue to do really well. I expect one of them to make the top eight, not both of them. If we're going to go into predictions, I think it's going to be four Space Marine players of various types, a Tau player, two Eldar Flyer spam lists, and then I'm hoping some random Chaos list. Or even better would be an Orc list if I can get into the top eight, but that's not, I don't think that's a reality. What do you think, Alan? What's your top eight look like?
I think you're right.
Wow. I don't think you've ever agreed with me in your life.
I think there's going to be a million Space Marines that are really dominating. Tau, I'm kind of worried about. If there's any Night Lords out there, Night Lords can really affect Tau. They're really a fly in their ointment because the ability to shut down auras and their ability to be sticky, hit units and stick to them, is really good. So it depends on matchup, but yeah. So I think I expect one of the good Tau players because they just have. So many drones that is just, and the army just is so good as we've seen. But
yeah, it's one of those armies that I'm like, I hope I don't play Tau because orcs have a really hard time killing drones. I don't have any Ludas. Ludas are pretty good at killing drones actually, but I don't have Ludas in my list, unfortunately. So
whenever I play a Tau player, I swear to God, they have the luckiest dice you've ever seen. It's like, I just can't, like, they're running around with like two-man drone squads and I'm smiting the crap out of them and they refuse to die. And it's just like, that is just so frustrating. So I saw at the top tables, if you make the top 16 or whatever it is, that they'll supply you your dice. So that's kind of interesting. So at least I can sleep at night knowing that they just got extremely lucky against me. But Eldar Flyer Spam, I expect one Eldar Flyer Spam. I don't know how many Eldar Flyers are going to be, but, maybe a Seer Council list might bubble up. I think some Chaos, because Chaos can do a lot of tricks with the Alpha Legion now and with the Night Lords. We've talked about the King of Bears. So their meta's in the flux right now, but something might, there's a good chance something is going to bubble to the top. You're not going to see like a bunch of discordants and running across the board at you anymore. It's not that type of army, but we'll see one Chaos player. Is there anything else going to be at the top? I'm trying to think. Maybe a Sisters of Battle, maybe an Imperial Guard army.
If there was going to be a Dark Horse, I'd put it on like a Necron making the top eight because Necrons have a good matchup into Space Marines.
Yeah. The meta. Brandon Grant. So you're discounting Brandon Grant. You say he's not good enough to make the top eight. Okay, that's fine.
That's right. I love Brandon. I saw him last week and I said, you're probably not making the top eight. he didn't disagree with me.
Yeah, because we've seen him because he was at the Dice Hammer GT. He's been he can win against Space Marines, but every once in a while.
Well, he played a guy who had never played that army before in a tournament game. He was like, this is his first game with Iron Hands. He brought Iron Hands and just creamed Brandon Grant on a table that is extremely similar to the top 100 tables you're going to see at LVO, which are essentially a bunch of like little walls.
Yeah. So when he's playing against players of equal skill level, playing Space Marines, he's gonna probably struggle.
Yeah, unfortunately, but that's just kind of how it goes. Yeah, he's aware of that.
I'm really kind of curious about to see what the Chaos meta is gonna be. How the Pazips bombs are gonna fare. How the King of Lord of Skulls or whatever is gonna fare. And if any of those new chapters traits will bubble to the top. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it too. I think I'm going to try and switch to Chaos for the first part of next year just to stop moving around 200 models. I played a game the other day and I had like 30 models. It was awesome. I was like, this is the best. I played so quick.
Yeah, the Phoenix Arises looks like it's not going to be out. It's going to be out the day of the LVO. So I was hoping to get a little help from
Thousand Sun Psychic Awakening.
Yeah, their Psychic Awakening because they previewed it way back in Christmas. It's like, okay, cool, maybe we'll see. But then they just sat on it, just no news at all. It's like, well, why tell us on Christmas if you're not gonna?
Yeah, well, it does look they have some good stuff, but we can save that for another day, Alan.
Yep.
So if any of you guys are in Vegas for the LVO, stop by and see Alan and I. We will be around. And TFG usually does a like a thing where we're usually at the bar, the hotel lobby bar. So come on, pop by and say hi, have a beer with us. We'll be usually there most nights having beers. And
we'll have also have our wrecked team jerseys on. Yeah. And I think our names are on the back, aren't they?
They certainly are, Alan.
So yeah,
Alan Hernandez.
Hernandez, yep.
That's him. And Jeff Poole. So guys, we hope to see you guys at LVO. And if you can't come, there is going to be a ton of media coverage. So keep an eye out for that. I know Reese and Frankie are doing the GW stream, and there's going to be a bunch of other media presence there. So we won't be doing it, but you know, we'll catch you on the flip side, I guess.
I'll be lying in a corner crying about Space Marines. That's curled true. Up in a ball.
He's going to have to walk across.
Wanted the bad touch to stop.
He's going to walk across the mountains as a result, and he's going to go on a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
What have they done to me?
So, yeah, so it'll be interesting. So I've got a lot of painting left to do, though. Got to get everything. Got a lot of pink horrors to paint. Got a lot of stuff still to do. Your army's pretty much done.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I'm ready to go. It's
and then good. We're going to team up for the team turn, the focus fire.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. We're going to play in the Long War doubles.
Yeah, we're going to.
Yo dog.
Yeah, so I don't know what our hobby scores are going to be, but yeah. Hopefully we can crush some of these hobbyists.
That's something we're going to do on Sunday. So on Sunday, it's like, if you don't know, it's top eight. And if you're not playing in the top eight, which is almost everyone, there's a ton of stuff going on. There's like a little RTT. There's a Long War doubles where each of you and your buddy bring a 1,000-point list, and you just kind of throw them together and go nuts. And it's a hobby event. So all my shit's painted, and we're bringing a Zeench-themed army. So it should be pretty cool. We'll see you guys in Vegas. And
we
if
can
you
almost
any...
do Pure Thousand Suns because you're Pure Thousand Suns.
Yeah,
right?
We could do Pure All right, Thousand
we'll,
Suns.
We'll do Pure Thousand Suns.
Like,
how's
yeah,
that?
Look at that. Bringing hobby back, brother.
Yeah.
All right, guys. If you want to email us before LVO and ask us any questions or anything like that, just email us at focusfirepodcast@gmail.com. And it was great talking, guys. We'll see you at LVO.
We are out. Take it easy and have a good LVO. Bye.